In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, November 20th, 2009 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We have made it to the end of another week, and I thank you for listening. Cybersecurity on the minds of lots of people, folks at every agency concerned about cybersecurity. One of the people who is no longer at an agency, but who is nonetheless concerned about cybersecurity is Greg Garcia, the former head of cyber at the Department of Homeland Security, and now the president of Garcia Strategies. And Greg is my guest today to talk about cybersecurity. Thank you for being on with me. I appreciate it, sir.
Good to be with you, Francis.
Where do we stand in your estimation in cybersecurity? How are we doing with a, just a kind of a quick thumbnail?
Cloudy with a chance of rain.
Not what we want to hear on a Friday afternoon, right?
Yeah, well, the sun is shining today, but I think we're on the right road. We have a lot of moving parts that we need to piece together. I think we know how we need to piece them together, we haven't quite put all of the tools and organizational structures in place to actually execute.
That actually kind of ties into what my next question was going to be, which is, do we know what we don't know? That's kind of the circular question that seems to get asked in this town a lot.
I think we do. I mean, I think we've seen enough of what the threats are out there that, in particular, are attacking federal networks. During my tenure at DHS, we saw terabytes of information flowing out of .gov networks. So given that level of visibility, we can only conclude that there is yet more flowing out that we're not seeing, and so that really was the instigation for the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative that President Bush signed into effect in January of 2008, which is truly a comprehensive strategy. Now we have a lot of work, a lot of money, a lot of coordination to put that strategy into action.
Before that happened, did it seem to you like there were some folks who didn't really either understand the severity and the breadth of the problem or even want to recognize that there was a problem to begin with?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the recognition, the awareness of cybersecurity as a big problem is an evolution. We have made progress over the years in building awareness both in the private sector and the public sector, but there remain enterprises in both large and small companies and in federal agencies that aren't acknowledging the severity of the problem, or if they are, they do not have the budget or the human resources to manage the problem. That's in part what the national strategy is attempting to get at, not just to build the awareness, but to get the resources in place to help all of the stakeholders secure their part of the information infrastructure.
What are the agencies doing right when it comes to cybersecurity as it stands today, and where do they need some help?
What they're doing right is there is a recognition, there is a coming together of the notion that if we're just looking at .gov, the .gov domain of all the federal agencies, we are an interconnected whole, and we're only as strong as the weakest link, and that we do need to drive resources toward protecting those infrastructures. So the cyber initiative starts with the recognition that we had way too many internet access points, external access points going into and out of .gov, from well north of 5,000 to consolidating those down to a target of around 100. And then you overlay on that intrusion detection, intrusion prevention technology that spots attacks as they're happening and stops them before they get in. And all of the agencies have a part to play in that, and they have a part to play by managing their own infrastructure and working with the Department of Homeland Security to provide that kind of visibility, that comprehensive situational awareness, if you will. But where they need to go, I think each and every federal agency has a challenge, and that is each chief information security officer tends to have limited power. Many agencies are a collection, many federal departments are a collection of smaller agencies. The chief security officers don't always have power over those subunits, and I think agencies need to consolidate their chief information security officer power in order to compel changes and improvements in network security across the federal enterprise.
What about the relationship between the chief information security officer and the CIO? CIOs have said for a long time, if you get them off the record, I don't think that my secretary or my agency head pays enough attention to me, and I don't mean that to sound in an egotistical way. It's just CIOs have felt for a long time like they were treated as the IT guy and not necessarily or woman and not necessarily involved in the at the policy level. And yet if you step down to the CISO level, a lot of times they'll say the same thing. I'm not included in the policy making at the CIO level. So what about that relationship dynamic? How do you think that should look compared to how it looks now?
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it, and that is that the foundation for that is that you have competing resource demands and competing political priorities, and of utmost importance is being able to articulate from the CISO to the CIO and from the CIO up to the cabinet secretary or in the private sector side, the CEO, to articulate the business imperative, the business operations and the business strategy and the business continuity imperative of having a robust cybersecurity posture. Because if you do not have a secure information infrastructure and it goes down because of a cyber attack or a denial of service attack, then you're out of business. As an agency, you're not performing your services to the public. As a business, you are not developing product or getting services out to your customers. It is a foundation of business continuity and business strategy to have a strong cybersecurity posture. And that's the point that's getting missed at the executive C-suite level, whether it's in the cabinet secretary or private enterprise. And that's the kind of awareness we're trying to help build.
You mentioned the concept of terabytes of data flowing out of the .gov network and that being only an indicator. Do you think we're in a better situation now than we were, say, 5 years ago at really knowing what is coming, what is going out of the networks that shouldn't be going out of the networks? Or do we even have all of that nailed down yet since the Trusted Internet Connection Initiative is still in progress?
Yeah, I think we're much better off than we were, and again, this is a work in progress. So we are building, we are building the Lego blocks, if you will, of greater situational awareness. Each intrusion detection and intrusion prevention box that is deployed across the federal enterprise is giving us more visibility as to what's happening, what's coming in, what's going out. What's the malicious code that we're seeing, and being able to share that real time and to respond to attacks in real time as they are happening, that is a step-by-step process. That is evolutionary, and that is resource building, and we are getting there. So we are better off than we were last year, and I do trust that we're going to be better off a year from now than we are today.
Between now and when TIC is finally ready, and there really is that absolute finite number of connections to the greater network, what is there any low-hanging fruit that exists that you see agency to agency that people could be doing that maybe because of time or really limited financial resources they haven't gotten a chance to, but that might be quick fixes to put people in an even better position than they're in now?
I think there's a number of answers to that question, and I'll pick one, and that is employee training. I think it is a low-cost, fairly simple way of building security into your workforce such that each and every person who logs onto their computer or takes their PDA or smartphone home or their thumb drive understands what the risks are and understands what their individual responsibilities are to the security of the network. Most of the problems we have in our cyber infrastructure are insider threats. And by insider, I don't necessarily mean somebody who is malicious. It is somebody who is either uninformed or careless. So every major enterprise can make, I think, tremendous strides by better training their employees. That is low-hanging fruit. And then I think there are a number of cost-effective technology tools out there that agencies can purchase and deploy that are cost-effective and operationally effective. So those are two low-hanging fruits that I can suggest right off the bat.
Greg, we've got to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about congressional oversight of cybersecurity at the agencies. But before we go to break, I want to ask you, do you think we focus too much on the insidious threat and not enough on what you're saying about the non-malicious threat, somebody who is uninformed or careless?
No, I don't think. I think we have to focus on all of it. We have to look at defense in depth, and we have to look at all threats, no matter where they come from the outside or from the inside. You cannot focus on one to the exclusion of the other, because if you do, you are not minimizing risk in the most optimal way.
Former Homeland Security Cyber Chief Greg Garcia, now the president of Garcia Strategies, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Sales, or do you own your own business? If so, I want you to think of a number. Think of the amount of money you'd like to make this year. Do you have it? Okay, so what's stopping you? It's not your drive. It's not your skills. Chances are it's your ability to find new leads. It's not easy. But what if someone had already done the work for you? What if with one phone call you could actually get your hands on as many new sales leads as you could handle and actually make that number you have in your head? It's not too good to be true. It's Sales Genie, the leading provider of targeted sales leads for sales professionals. No matter what you're selling or who you're selling to, Sales Genie has the sales leads you need. And right now, they'll give you 100 sales leads free. Call Sales Genie at 1-800-500-1967 and find out how to get 100 sales leads for free. Call 1-800-500-1967. Again, that's 1-800-500-1967. 1967.
See you later. Off-season greetings to all of Natstown. Give the gift that gives back all season long and buy a season ticket package for your favorite baseball fan. Tis the season for giving, so we'll add up to $7 to each ticket for every game in your plan. That's $7 free dollars to use to buy food, drinks, and Nats gear at Nats Park. It's the best value in town and a limited time offer. Call 202-675-NATS or visit nationals.com/2010.
This is Rynthia Rost, Vice President of Geico Insurance Company, urging you to give the gift of a membership fee to a child this year at your local Boys and Girls Clubs. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington supplies a safe haven, targeted programming, caring adult mentors, and educational activities to youth who would otherwise be home alone or on the streets. Log on to bgcgw.org and click on Donate Now to see how you can help. This message is brought to you by Geico and Bonneville International.
Here's Kenneth Jenkins of the U.S. Secret Service from the panel discussion on identity theft, the $500 billion criminal enterprise, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
The task force concept has been invaluable to us in the fight against identity theft. The task forces are made up of local and state law enforcement, private industry, and academia that can come together to solve these problems. You may have a case that starts in New York, may go to Los Angeles, may go overseas now, and you need these partnerships in order to fight these cases.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Identity theft is a multifaceted problem that has grown to epidemic proportions with the development of the Internet and of the online economy. Each year, identity theft and fraud cost the U.S. government tens of billions of dollars and impact agencies and programs across the federal space. Booz Allen Hamilton has developed an integrated approach to identity issues based on a deep understanding of their clients' missions and of years of helping clients across government and commercial sectors. Booz Allen is ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/identity.
We're back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Greg Garcia, the former Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity and Communications at the Department of Homeland Security, and now the President of Garcia Strategies. And you have the benefit on a day like today, Greg, of being located in Annapolis now. So lucky you.
Thank you. Look, overlooking the water.
Oh, that's fantastic. You've been talking recently about the oversight role of Congress and the way that it impacts cybersecurity in the government, especially given your experience at DHS. Talk about where that oversight is today and how it could maybe better serve, in particular, the people at the agencies that are trying to keep the network secure.
Certainly. First off, I spent 2 years on Capitol Hill as a staff member for the House Science Committee several years ago. So I have a deep appreciation for the importance of congressional oversight on missions as critical as cybersecurity. That said, however, I think that Congress is not performing its oversight role as effectively as it should. At last count, there are 108 committees and subcommittees within the United States Congress in both the House and the Senate that claim some jurisdiction, some jurisdictional oversight over cybersecurity for the Department of Homeland Security and several other federal agencies. You know, that's a lot of pinballs bouncing around within the pinball machine, and it is really hard to manage and organize that. At DHS, I spent inordinate amounts of time, and my staff as well, and the congressional relations staff at DHS and senior executives within the agency, responding to congressional questions for the record, going up to testify on Capitol Hill, and otherwise having to do jumping jacks and push-ups at any given moment.
There are some universally agreed upon themes, though, when it comes to DHS oversight in particular on Capitol Hill. Everybody seems to agree there are too many committees with jurisdiction. Everybody seems to agree that DHS officials spend too much time responding to these requests, as you've just discussed. But nobody on Capitol Hill seems to want to give up the jurisdiction. Nobody seems willing to say, I'll step back and let you guys have that.
Yeah, and that is really the nature of the political beast, and I can respect that the congressional committees and members of Congress have certain political pressures upon them for maintaining their position of power as leadership of a congressional committee, or in terms of their visibility to their constituents and the congressional leadership, but that is not constructive for the execution of homeland security and national security critical missions like cybersecurity. So there is a clash between politics and cybersecurity and homeland security, and I think it is incumbent upon the congressional leadership in the Speaker's office and the Senate Majority Leader's office to corral their committees and show leadership. That's why they're called the leadership. And bring those committees together and get them around the table and clearly delineate what their jurisdiction is, what are their responsibilities, hold them accountable for finding where those gaps are in cybersecurity policy that they can legitimately fill, and then have them in a coordinated way do a comprehensive national congressional strategy for cybersecurity that supports the federal agencies.
And you think the odds of that actually happening anytime soon are...
50%. If the committee leadership, if the congressional leadership, and they have many, many competing priorities on their agenda, and I recognize the difficulty of it, but they need, the congressional leadership needs to regain control of their committee leaders, do a comprehensive strategy in the same way that they are asking the Department of Homeland Security and the White House to do a comprehensive strategy.
You are much
walk the talk.
You are much more optimistic than most people that I've talked to. Greg Garcia, former Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity and Communications at DHS, now the president of Garcia Strategies, and we'll wrap up our conversation when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is In Depth with Francis Rose.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Worse than expected results from computer maker Dell and home builder D.R. Horton are putting pressure on the markets. The Dow's down 43 points, the Nasdaq lower by 16. Oil is down about a half a buck to $76 a barrel. Homebuilder D.R. Horton says its fourth quarter loss narrowed, but revenue fell 42% to $1 million. Dell, with a 54% drop in net income and a 15% decline in revenue. That's more than analysts had been forecasting. The computer company has been hurt by tightened spending by corporations and large government agencies, which make up the majority of Dell's revenue. And Oprah will be calling it quits in 2011. After 25 seasons, the popular talk show host says her decision to end the Oprah Winfrey Show came after, quote, much prayer and careful thought. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Hi, this is Sally Field. You may not know it, but osteoporosis runs in families. My mother has it, and now I have it. So my doctor started me on once-monthly Boniva. Boniva helps stop and reverse bone loss, so it's possible to do more than just stop bone loss.
Boniva ibandronate sodium is a 150 milligram prescription tablet for postmenopausal osteoporosis, CRAD, and Weight Watchers. Don't take Boniva if you have low blood calcium, severe kidney disease, or can't sit or stand for at least 1 hour. Follow dosing instructions carefully. Stop taking Boniva and tell your doctor if you have difficult or painful swallowing, chest pain, or severe or continuing heartburn, as these may be signs of serious upper digestive problems. If jaw problems or severe bone, joint, and or muscle pain develop, tell your doctor.
You've got one body and one life, so it's important to have strong, healthy bones. Ask your doctor if Boniva is right for you.
Boniva, help stop and reverse bone loss. For a free trial offer, call 1-800-4-BONIVA or visit Boniva.com.
What antibiotics can't do. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ted Pastorius with HHS HealthBeat. Antibiotics may be wonder drugs, especially if you have something like pneumonia or another bacterial infection, but they have their limits. Antibiotics work against bacteria, but not viruses. So, if you have a viral infection, like a cold or the flu, antibiotics won't cure your infection. So, getting your doctor to prescribe you antibiotics might give you nothing more than a false sense of security. Regardless, a lot of people can get their doctors to prescribe them antibiotics. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Lori Hicks.
Well over 50% of people who go into their doctor's office for a respiratory infection, like a cold, will walk out with an antibiotic even though it is totally ineffective.
Hicks points out that there are other options for treating cold and flu symptoms, such as lots of liquids and plenty of rest. Learn more at HHS.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ted Pastorius.
Attention. President Obama recently signed a Bill of Rights to protect the American public from the unfair tactics employed by credit card companies. In a separate initiative, Consumer Debt Advocate has established a special hotline to help consumers with questions, complaints, and difficulties with $10,000 or more in credit card debt. We're Consumer Debt Advocate, and we're ready to accept your calls. Call the toll-free hotline now for free information about programs that can reduce your credit card debt. Call 1-800-700-0588. Many Americans have been trapped by the downturn in the economy and by the misleading policies employed by credit card companies. Free information about programs that can reduce your credit card debt is now available. We're Consumer Debt Advocate, and we're ready to accept your calls. Listeners with questions, complaints, and difficulties with their credit card bills should call immediately. For free information, call the toll-free number now at 1-800-700-0588. 1-800-700-0588. That's 1-800-700-0588.
This is Rynthia Rost, Vice President of Geico Insurance Company, urging you to give the gift of a membership fee to a child this year at your local Boys and Girls Clubs. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington supplies a safe haven, targeted programming, caring adult mentors, and educational activities to youth who would otherwise be home alone or on the streets. Log on to bgcgw.org and click on Donate Now to see how you can help. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
In depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome back to the program. My guest on In Depth today is Greg Garcia, the former Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity and Communications at the Department of Homeland Security and now President of Garcia Strategies. What kind of work and are you doing as the head of Garcia Strategies? Who are you working with?
lot of different folks, Francis, in cybersecurity, from very large companies to small startups. I'm on the advisory board of several small startups. I'm working with academia and nonprofits, all driving toward different approaches to solving our cybersecurity problem. So I'm staying with the National Cybersecurity Mission, and it's good to go at it from a variety of angles.
We are seeing a lot of legislation in regarding cybersecurity. Senator Carper is working on a revision of FISMA. Senators Lieberman and Collins have a package. Senator Rockefeller on the House side. Congresswoman Watson has a bill. There's a lot of stuff out there. How do you see them? I don't mean reconciliation in the formal term, of course, but how do you see these bills all kind of coming together or taking maybe the good parts out of each one to build some kind of a piece of legislation that will improve the situation? Or is it maybe are we beyond legislation now?
Well, you know, everybody's got good ideas, and I think we do need to review those good ideas and see which ones need to really come to the fore. We don't really know fully what kind of legislation might be necessary, might be effective, and what kind of legislation might be counterproductive. And that's why I take it back to the congressional leadership to coordinate this effort. And coming back to your remark before the break that I was being optimistic with a prediction of 50%, you know, congressional leadership can do what they want if they put their minds to it. They have the power to do it. And I draw back to the late 1980s when the U.S. economy was having all kinds of troubles with unfair trade practices abroad, with loans defaulting in third world countries, in foreign investment in the United States. Congressional leadership got together. They pulled together 13 congressional committees with overlapping jurisdictions and said, all right, we're going to produce a comprehensive Omnibus Trade Act. And they did. And within 18 months, they produced something that was signed in late 1987 called the Omnibus Trade Act of 1987. And it was, I think, a model for how legislation ought to be crafted by a central coordinating authority that was congressional leadership in the House and Senate and congressional committees that, by and large, worked together to craft what ultimately was pretty good policy. It's never perfect, but it was good. They can do the same kind of thing if they put their minds to it on cybersecurity.
All right. Another bit of Hill intrigue. Senator Lieberman, Senator Collins, chairman and ranking member of the Homeland Security Committee, on differing sides of the idea of having a Senate-confirmed cyber coordinator. Where are you on that?
I think a cyber coordinator is useful if it is structured properly and if you have the right person in place. Every White House since the beginning has the propensity to micromanage. That isn't going to help our mission. I think Senator Collins' concern is well placed if we're looking at a cyber coordinator that is going to take too much control away from DHS, operational or otherwise. DHS has the expertise. National Security Agency has additional expertise, the Defense Department, et cetera. The White House coordinator ought to bring those different agencies together, just like I'm suggesting for the Congress, deconflict where there is mission overlap, hold them accountable for their responsibilities, make sure they are marching forward with unity of purpose, and make the big policy decisions, but leave the operational details to the agencies with the expertise. If you have a cyber coordinator that can do that and then step out of the way and delegate authority, I think it can be effective. But the way it's set up right now, I'm a little concerned. It's somebody who is reporting to both the National Security Advisor and the Economic Policy Advisor. It could introduce too many layers into the decision-making process.
And I guess to wrap up our conversation, there's so much to this, and I would love to have you come back and continue this discussion at some point because there's always more cyber subjects to cover. The legislation that we've been talking about, saw an argument recently by a columnist in a trade magazine, and I wish I could remember who it was so that I could give him credit. But the suggestion that he was making was that cybersecurity legislation, we've come to a point where it's almost moot because the threats against our networks, not just the government networks, but all across the private sector and so on, change so quickly that legislation can't possibly follow along behind it closely enough.
absolute truth to that. The more detailed and technical the Congress tries to get with legislation, the less relevant it becomes. So if there is a determination sometime down the road that there really is market failure, that the private sector is not stepping up to its responsibility and making the investments that need to be made, then there could be some legislation that says that at some minimum level of security, companies in the private sector and the government have to be held accountable for levels of security. And that can be a living standard, if you will, a standard that evolves with the technology and that evolves with the threats. But if you get too detailed and you get too technical, it's irrelevant, just as you say.